Good evening, one and all. Oh, well, one of the great things about doing so many shows is you get guests come back time after time, and it becomes like a friendship with them and everything like that. And it's almost, especially in some cases, in fact, a case of my guest today. We've sort of been with him since he essentially went from the travel books to the thriller type books. And it's great to have him back on the show. Actually, have him back in the country, because I know he lives in France most of the time now, but he is back visiting for a couple of months. And, what can I tell you about him? He has been classed by, of all people, the BBC, so you can't get any better than that, the master of existential thriller, of the existential thriller, because he writes it. And he is, I must admit, when I tell my wife he's coming on the show, and we get a book sent through, she can't wait, because she is a big fan of this man. She loves all his books. I better introduce him, haven't I? Because back on the show, it's great to have once again the one and only Mike Bond. Hi Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for the invitation back on the show. I love it. We have talked about a number of different things over a number of years, and it's always been great fun. So, Barry, I appreciate the invitation. I'm delighted.
It's Peter. And I was thinking, because one of the things that, you started off writing sort of like, almost like holiday books, wasn't it? Guides to Kenya and Guides to Mexico, because you do get around a bit. Shall we say? What is it, like over 50,000 miles, I reckon you've hiked, twice the way round the world. Your shoes must be a bit worn out by now, that's what I can say. But you did a few of these guides before you actually started writing, in the sort of fiction type role, because one of the things I know that you want to do when you write is because of basically the state the world's in, and I was thinking about this the other day, in fact this last week, because I was reading an article that was going on about how the Gulf Stream is in the risk of basically breaking. Now, I don't think it was you, but somebody, and it might be Steve, somebody wrote a book about, a story about this, and here we are. We're under threat of it, and that would cause huge issues. England would become like Iceland. It would. It would be all sorts of issues. But you do like...
Are you getting a little nervous there?
Just a little nervous, yeah. I'm glad I'm on the other side, but just a little... But it's interesting. I was talking to my mother, and she said, where is the weather used to come from? Because I used to sort of say... Well, I still do, especially in the winter, still works, but it takes like 10 days for the weather to sort of get vaguely from the east coast of America over to Great Britain. But in the summer in the summer now, evidently, it's more continental interior. It's more coming from sort of Russia and stuff like that. They've got it now. So it has changed a bit already.
Yeah, what happens with that, too, is this inevitable ocean warming, and the Gulf Current, which starts in the Gulf of Mexico, goes along the east coast of the United States and Canada, crosses over underneath Greenland, and then comes down past Iceland, Ireland, the British Isles, and on to Europe. And as Greenland melts, or if Greenland continues to melt more, that's going to shove that current further out to sea and, as you said, break it or dislodge it.
Yeah.
The effects are going to be very serious in Europe because the warming effect of that current will be diminished. Now, I'm not sure how likely this is. We get so many scare stories that it covers up the true realities of where we are, which we could talk about later. But in any case, it's a very complex world these days.
Indeed, and I know, the whole business of the warming and the power and everything, it's been something that you've been very involved with. You were international energy expert, let's face it, for quite a while on that sort of thing. So you know all about this stuff, and it's scary, not so much for my generation, but for my grandchildren's and great-great-grandchildren's and whatever comes along, it's, I know they're talking about doing something. Now they've got somebody who actually might listen to the rest of the world. don't get me started on that. it is a worry.
Yeah, and there's many things to worry about, and a lot of it is actually in the final analysis. It's always good to go back to first causes.
Yeah.
And one of the first causes that no one talks about is overpopulation.
Yep.
Which affects everything from immigration to climate warming to international conflicts to crime rates to everything. But in this case, the problem is, as usual, as a former journalist, and that's how I got started writing the travel books, too.
Right.
My wife and I, when we were journalists, like for the FT, Financial Times and stuff, it wasn't, let's say, an overabundant paycheck. So every time you got a chance to do something else, like write a travel book, if you knew what you were talking about, you jumped at it. So that's why we ended up with several travel books. But in any case, as a former journalist, I have to say we have to be very, very careful about journalism these days.
Oh, crikey.
So much of it is just fear-mongering and clickbaits. And it doesn't matter which side you're on. And my own thoughts at this point are that climate warming is, there's not much we can do about it at this point. As soon as possible, we need to adopt nuclear power and a safe nuclear power,
right,
which means we can't have everybody building them. And secondly, we really have to move toward a lower carbon footprint. And,
indeed.
It can be done. And we have to grow our forests back. That's the other thing.
Right.
That's the best way to trap CO2. But anyway, I don't worry, England is not going to go away.
I hope not. It's interesting because, about the carbon footprint and that when COVID came out and people were traveling, what happened, the whole thing sort of got a lot better for a small period. All the smog disappeared and everything like that. It just shows you what can be done. Talking about can be done, Goodbye Paris was your latest one with terrorists and stuff, the special forces person, Pono Hawkins, I think it was. That's your latest one of those. And I know you like bringing in the special forces people and stuff like that. Where did you get the idea from Goodbye Paris from?
Well, Goodbye Paris started out, it's just based on my own background in this business and having lived a lot of my life in France and knowing the situation in France with fundamentalism, Islamic fundamentalism, and it's not like the United States where that's really a pretty minor concern. Even more than the UK, France is at serious risk. And so I just try to write about it straight, like you would as a journalist, showing both sides and showing where things really are. And that's what my latest one, the one that just came out, which is kind of a different genre, America, which is a historical novel, is something to do the same thing, to show both sides of an evolving crisis, in this case in the U.S. from 1955 up to the present, and also the U.K. and Europe, as well as elsewhere.
Okay, just shows
I was just going to say that I do think that fiction can be a very accurate way of telling history.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
And we've talked about this before, because you put the reader, you put the reader in the body of
a character living
back then, but the reader gets to experience all these crises in these historical contexts as if she or he were actually in them. And as long as you're accurate and true, you can make a heck of a good story that way.
Right, indeed, because as you say, America, book one of what I think is going to be like a 7-book series or something like that, is it? basically from the sort of 50s, 60s, all the way through the 60s, what happened in the 60s, obviously, you know, you had young president was killed, you know, Kennedy, the war was unpopular, the civil rights were starting, riots everywhere, burning. But of course, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll was basically allowed out.
That was the salvation.
Exactly.
For all that other garbage. Right.
Right.
Yeah, you put your finger right on it. It was a time starting even prior to the assassination of John Kennedy. There was a sudden flood of marijuana coming up from Mexico, which changed a lot of young people's heads. The war became more and more unpopular, and there was an enormous amount of resistance to it. There was these over 200 cities in the U.S. Burned partially or completely to the ground in the last 2 years in civil rights riots. It was a very drastic time, and as a consequence, it's very valuable to look at that and to see where we are now, as you mentioned earlier when you were talking about where we are now.
Yeah.
Because as so many thinkers have said, you can't possibly understand the present unless you understand the past.
Yeah.
And so as a consequence, one of the purposes of Writing America was to give us a 70-year window starting in the 50s all the way up to the present about what the world and the United States and Europe have gone through, how everything's changed, how where the problems were and where the new ones are coming, and what do we need to remember about the past in order to provide for a better future.
All right. Well, see, as I've been around for those 70 years, I can relate to this book, because I was talking to my mother this morning, and we were saying about I was born in 52, and of course the Queen's coronation was like 53, I think. I can't remember that, but I can remember as a sort of toddler going to the clinic, as it then was, where you got your free powdered milk, your cod liver oil, an orange sort of syrup thing, and we got a tin of Marmite. And I say, well, that's where I learned my love for Marmite, because we got it because it's full of vitamin B. And, you know, at the time, it's good for rickets and all this sort of stuff. And then you sort of look at that and, hey, you know, we still were in, you know, sweet and candy rations until 54. Yeah, we weren't having it. My mother never saw a banana until the late 50s, because we just never had them, you know, until the sort of stuff started, you know, coming over and that sort of thing. And then, as you say, you know, the communication wasn't just the radio. You had the television. You could see this stuff, and the news was able to be communicated better, I'm trying to think who it was. Somebody. It doesn't matter. So there's somebody who was the person who received the information about Pearl Harbor. The person who received the information in America was actually quite a famous person. And I can't think who it was. But never mind. So that joke goes by the board. That bit of information. But no. And you look at that and how we grew up in those days, what we did in those days. And yeah, I look back and think, heck, how am I still alive? The stuff we used to do. You know, we drank out of hose pipes, stuff dropped on the floor, used to eat it, used to, you know, pick up stuff and take this, that and the other. And, you know, you just didn't do it. And now it's, you know, you can't do anything without at least 200 people knowing about it. Sort of thing, or so it seems.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, you touched on a really good point, and that's what I start out doing in America. It's the story of four kids in the age of about 9 or 10. And we get to see, I mean, these are kids growing up in rural New York State and walking barefoot out in the fields in the morning and their chores starting at 5:30, walking 2 miles to school, two miles home. It was work, and it was yet great joy in a very close-knit family, and so many of the things that have been lost, not only in the U.S., but almost worldwide.
Yeah.
That to is also, as you said, is to learn much about where we should be now rather than not where we are.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I do a flea market at the weekends, and I sort of buy and sell online and stuff like that. And people these days are buying stuff on nostalgia, stuff that they had in their childhood, a red wagon, shall I say, and all this sort of stuff. And that's why people are buying it, because it brings back memories of, brings nostalgic memories of the use of the whole Pyrex explosion and all that sort of stuff, I wonder, when you sort of sat down, was this something that you planned to make it such a big thing? In which case, how did you go about getting the characters? Did you sort of say, I can bring them in here and then I'm going to make them that much older or that much older? How did you go about that whole bit of planning such a great, a set of seven, basically, isn't it? I think it's going to be in this series.
Right. Seven novels, yeah. Well, what happened was I've been wanting to write parts of it for many years. It's kind of where I grew up till age 10, and then we moved from rural New York to rural Maine. Part of it is my early lifetime and growing up in the free, absolute wild freedom of being a kid back then. When I was 4 and 5 years old, I would go down the field behind the house and into this vast forest and just wander the vast forest even when I was 4 and 5. And nobody worried. And later, when I was 9, I jumped a freight train with a friend of mine. We were trying to get from rural New York to Florida just to see if we could. And, nobody does that anymore because we've gotten a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But that's one of the opening scenes in the book America. But as you said, Barry, there was so much freedom. I mean, we had a phone, for instance, with 8 different families on the same line.
Yeah, party lines. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, party lines. It's 2, but even so, that's it. If it went click, click, somebody else was using it.
So anyway, we learned to keep a certain amount of privacy. We certainly weren't hooked into the telephone. I mean, I didn't get a television. We didn't get a television in the house till I was 8 or 9. So before that, if you wanted to see something in the way of visuals, you went to a movie once a month, and it cost you a nickel.
Yeah.
And so, life was so much freer. We used to walk 2 miles to school. We would walk down the hill from the farm.
Yeah.
And across a big open meadow, and there was an old farmhouse kind of falling down in the middle of it. And that was General Lafayette's headquarters during the American Revolution.
Yeah.
And when I went to school in the 4th grade, they had to move our class to another building so they could repair the room or something. Mm-hmm. And they put us in a log house that had been General Washington's headquarters.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So we came right out in, the earth. You walked the earth barefoot. You didn't have any worries.
Yeah.
Dogs ran free.
Yeah.
And you had an ice box. You didn't have a refrigerator.
Nah.
On and on. But it was, and then the music started to come. The music.
Yeah.
Dumped the blues, which became the blues, which became rock and roll. What a great period that was. So there were many wonderful advantages to living.
Oh, certainly. I mean, you're saying about the ice box. I can remember. We on a treat on Sundays. We got a little block of ice cream, but it was the Walls ice cream man used to come round on a pedal bike with a sort of fridge thing on the front of it, and that was it. We were outside waiting for him to. It used to be the slogan used to be "Stop me and buy one." Was the slogan, and that's it. He rode about on his bike, with this fridge thing on the front, and he stopped in to get a little block of ice cream, and that was our Sunday treat. Yeah.
You didn't have to go to the mall and buy something with 400 different kinds of ingredients from, That sounds great. Yeah, I remember the Iceman bringing the other tongs,
The big ice tongs. Yeah, we didn't have that, obviously, but not so much as over here. But I remember, in fact, I've seen them quite a few times, the big ice tongs that everybody used to have,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the ice pick to break it up.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a very different time, and people trusted each other more. The crime rates were much lower. There was such a sense of personal freedom.
Yeah.
Families, as I said earlier, were so much more cohesive. The majority of families were husband and wife and children, and often grandparents and uncles and aunts. I grew up in we both had large Irish families.
Right.
So you grew up with so many uncles and aunts, all of whom took care of you. Of course you did.
Yeah. I remember my mother was working. She used to go up on the train to London. Uh-huh. And when I came home from school, it was like the neighbour or something like that. I went and had tea with them until my mother came home from school, from work, you know. But that's how it was in those days. When you set about writing America, I mean, have you finished it all? Or are you sort of still sort of part way? Did you sort of write the whole thing first before you brought it out?
No, I've actually finished the first three and I'm working on the fourth.
Ah, okay.
Again, that will take us from 1955 and eventually with all seven, Barry, right up to the present. And one of the things I'm trying to do also, or am doing also, is I'm following these four young people as they grow up from age 9 and 10 into youth and adulthood and marriage and long-term relationships and careers. And then we watch them grow old until they face death and they face loss. And what I want here is the whole arc of the human life.
Right.
To be able to see it and talk about it so we all remember that we have the same arc between birth and death.
Right.
It's very important, and what I'm trying to do here is really keep to the truth of what life really is and not all the foolishness of politics.
Yeah. Don't start me on that. You're right. But it's interesting. It's different to what you normally write about. Have you had any sort of response from people who normally go through your thriller thing saying, hey, I started reading it, but I'm really getting quite into it. I mean, what sort of response have you received so far?
I've got a wonderful response. Basically, my thrillers are not meant just to entertain. They're all
educational as well.
Or more or less, I want people to live in these times and understand them as they really were, and that's what I'm doing now.
Right.
So it's really all the same. And the response has been fabulous. I mean,
great.
I've had so many positive reviews, and so many people saying they love it. So I really want to know what readers think. So I'm delighted that it's doing so well.
Okay. I mean, it's the sort of thing that I think would make a great TV thing. Like following a family, or not like the Waltons, you know, indirectly, but that sort of thing, the fact that people are following the family and, you know, getting to know the people and everything, and educational at the same time as hopefully making you think. And I think it would go really good.
Well, thank you. One of the things that's similar to is in the UK is even more popular than in the US, but the Poldark series.
Yes.
12 books starting basically when the hero comes back to Britain from the American Revolution.
Yeah.
And it's you really fall in love with the people in the book. You understand them. You care about them. But also you learn an incredible amount about the history of that time, which allows us to see better how Britain has evolved since then.
Yeah. I remember the whole thing about the Industrial Revolution bit the workers stuff and that, like, and I it was very interesting to see it in that format of the, you know, like the series that you were following. And again, like we said, you know, it's a fiction, but it's not a fiction, and you're putting yourself in and you're learning without realizing you're learning, which is great.
I want my readers to live the time as they would have if they were then. And I get a lot of readers saying, my God, I lived through that time. You've drawn it so well. Mm. So that's good to know, too.
Well, it's good to know that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as long as we're on America, the book one, it is available from most any library,
as well as
independent bookstores, and the major online distributors as well. Try your local library first, but also Amazon has just dropped the price of the ebook to $1.49.
Oh, wow.
As part of big sales. So it's a good time to grab it. And take a look. A lot of people say it's really wonderful.
It is. I was just going to hand the show over to you for you to do that, but you beat me to it.
Oh, my goodness. You and I have been through this a few times.
I know. So apart from, obviously, America, are you still writing some of your thriller stuff as well?
Yes, I am. I have another one that's going to come out early next year. Part of which takes place in London, part of it which takes place in New York City and in Wyoming, of all places.
Oh, wow.
as well as in Southeast Asia and Africa. So, and again, like all my books, it's based on my own experiences. I've been in all those places and worked in the spheres that are covered in my books. Usually, if I write about a place, it's because I've been there.
Exactly.
If I describe a street, it's because I've been to that street.
And always great descriptions, you know, because of that same fact. So that's great. Well, Michael, it's been great catching up with you. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
I've loved it. I thank you very, very much. And I just think that your Book in a Chat is a wonderful show, and you've turned a lot of people on to a lot of great books, and that's just a fabulous gift to everyone.
Thank you so much. Well, there you go. My guest today, great to have him back on the show, the one and only Mike Bond. And apart from his thriller stuff, we've been talking about his new set of seven historical type series, and the first one's out called America. Book one came out, and as he says, it's sort of like from the fifth, like if you like snapshots, each book is like a 10-year snapshot, and the characters, how it changes, their life changes, etc. Starting with the sort of 50s, 60s stuff, so we go through the whole 60s and the riots and civil rights and Vietnam and sex, drugs, rock and roll, and loss of presidents as well, as we marked on. But great stuff, and it sounds a really terrific book. I'm sure from what he says, a lot of people already getting into this great new series, so look out for that. And as he says, you can get most books, but you can also find him on MikeBondBooks.com. MikeBondBooks, all one word, .com. Looking great stuff there. Anyway, I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. As long as I get a phone number. I haven't got a phone number from them at the moment. But I'll be back. If not, we'll have an old show like we do. And until then, as always, we've got one thing left to say. Don't forget...